How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Lance Storm here. Figure Four Daily. It is December 11, 2024. Figure Four Online.com / WrestlingObserver.com. We are here live and free. We got a lot to talk about here today. Lance did a solo show last week. Lance, is that true? You did a Q&A for subscribers?
Yeah, it took a while to get posted, but I did, and it went up. I haven't actually listened back to it, but it's there.
God forbid you listen back to your own show. Never know what you might hear.
Mm-hmm. Might learn something.
I used to do that, and I became so disgusted with myself.
Well, that, and there's just 10 billion shows now, both here and to watch.
Man, I got so many people messaging me about my MRI and the bill that I got. It's crazy.
That's the greatest story.
God. Is it really better in Canada, or is
yes,
it just deal it with a better different in sort Canada. Of? Okay, just checking. All right. Anyway, let's get going on the news here. So you watched NXT last night, Lance? Is that right?
I did.
What did you think about it?
I double and triple checked my DVR to make sure it would record, and there. Well, I guess like every wrestling show, there's good and bad, but my biggest takeaway, I think, is I really wish they were out of the Performance Center. That I think not only is there the need for piped-in sound, because quite often if you look at the people, they're not particularly invested, which, again, has happened anywhere that anyone ran regular TV tapings in the same building forever, whether it be Marietta, Georgia, that had shows forever. Where were some of the other places? But it's like you've seen it all. You've seen it a million times and you see it regularly. So the crowd's often quiet and they have to pipe in sound, but which is fine for a viewer because, again, you hear the noise, you see the action, but it makes it really hard for people who are learning to pace what they do and react in the moment like you would if there's reaction, because they won't be hearing that. And I found with many of the matches here, especially the tags, there's a lot of tags, that I'm watching them. And again, if I watch more regularly, I might be invested in some of the people, because the Hank and Tank and Tyson and Tyreek match, it's like I didn't know who the babyface was supposed to be until the end when they all shook hands. And I'm like, oh, I guess they all are. But there's very few moments where I'm allowed to react to anything, because the spots just continue. And it's something I used to, when I taught and when I was doing match feedback and stuff, would always comment that you need to treat each spot like a sentence. And at the end of every good sentence is a period or a full stop, so that we can absorb and react to that sentence. But if you make it a comma, and you just go directly into the next spot and then a comma and a next, it's like there's never a chance to react. And when you eliminate some of those reacting moments, it's also much harder to tell who the babyface and the heel is, because those spots where I might cheer the babyface, hopefully, I don't get a chance to. I'm just watching the, oh, action, 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 action. Oh, there's more action. Oh, there's more action. And I never get that moment to connect with or identify who the babyface is. And I found that in a lot of these matches, that while the stuff is executed well, there's a lot of run-on sentences to stick with my analogy. And with that, I think if they were in more venues, like again, they showed the clip from, where were they, Minneapolis for the big show. I appreciated the video package they opened up with. Like when there are those reactions, I think even if you're green and weren't planning on pausing and allowing them to happen, the fact that there's a big reaction from the crowd, you tend to pause for a moment to hear it or mark out for it and react to it. And so a lot of these matches I found, considering the action involved and the spots involved, I would enjoy it a lot more if they had moments to slow down, kid, not to be, you know, the aged veteran. I love the speed of the spots and the action of the spots, but I would prefer if there were some moments where I could react to them. And it's something I really harp on people. It's like, give me that moment at the end of the whatever cool shit you're going to do for you to stand tall, be there, fired up, and me to react to you. It's something that, again, I'll finish the sentence and then you can chime in if you like.
Please.
Jericho really drove home to me, and I don't know if taught, but really clicked it in my head when we worked in Japan because of the magazine coverage rather than television coverage. He emphasized the importance of having those moments where the photographer can find your goddamn face and shoot you because the good photographs are the ones that get in the magazines. And if you get photographs in the magazines, you're getting publicity, you're getting press, you're getting FaceTime, screen time. And by having those moments where, you know, you have your babyface fire or whatever you do, it really allows the audience to connect you with you. And I think they're missing out on that.
Well, where to begin? First off, you're not wrong about the music between the notes, Lance. It's very, very important. The background between the foreground and an oil painting, another way to look at it. And yes, I watch that show sometimes, and it's like, the thing that is always amazing to me is, I don't know what it is. I don't know if people are trolling or if they really don't get it. But you remember that match with like Sol Ruka and Kalani Jordan? And they copied a bunch of spots that Ricochet and Will Ospreay had done. And
although I had heard that's actually not who they were copying.
Well, actually, I know it was because they had like the side-by-side and they were exactly the same. So at some point in that match, they copied a Ricochet-Will Ospreay spot. But the point is, it doesn't matter. The point is, like, I've seen them copy spots from other matches and they're not as good, but on the internet, they're exactly as good. And I'm like, no, they're not. And I can't figure out if people don't actually see that or if they actually believe that. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like, there's a reason that like sometimes you can see a bunch of flips and twists and high spots and it's like mind blowing. And other times you will see people copy them exactly the same and it's not mind blowing at all. And if you point that out, people get really mad saying, well, hey, other guys did the same moves. It's not about the moves.
It's you and Craig again.
Yeah, it's me and Craig doing Vader and Shawn Michaels. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that was as good a match as Vader and Shawn Michaels. It wasn't even close. Our match sucked because we didn't know what we were doing. We were just doing a bunch of moves. And yes, a lot of times I will watch an NXT match and I got nothing against Sol Ruka. I've said this 1,000 times.
Actually, like, I really like her.
Yeah. I mean, she's got so much upside, but she's green. And in the Iron Survivor Challenge this weekend, the first two in the ring were Julia and Ren Sinclair, okay? Now, whatever you think about both of them, one thing that I can tell you is they've both been wrestling for a long time. Not like, you know, decades, but I mean, Ren's been doing this for 5 years. She did indies, she did the NWA, she did AEW, I think she did some TNA maybe, but she's been around, and she's worked in NXT. You know, Julia, I mean, she's been working for 7 years. And you could see when they were in the ring wrestling, okay, they're experienced enough that there was an organic feel to it. So, but it was just like wrestling, just grappling or whatever. Then Sol Ruka hits the ring, and now it's a bunch of, you know, space flying tiger drop and flips and spins and everything. But it's like all of the organic part of the match was gone because it suddenly became a three-way with a green person that was choreographed from start to finish. And like I could see like immediately, this looks totally different than what I saw in that first period. Yes.
In defense,
you raised your finger.
Yes, I wanted your attention. That may be, well, it's at least partially due to the fact that once you get into three ways and you need three people doing stuff, everybody choreographs more. If it's just you and me having a match, we could call it in there and just wing it and grapple. But as soon as you start doing spots with three people, you got to choreograph that shit.
Well, of course you do. But the difference is this. And it's not just three ways, Lance. You know this as well as I do. Even in one-on-one matches, experienced guys will be backstage and they'll spend an hour or two going over their match and they'll have 50 spots that they have planned out. And there is a great degree of choreography in every match that you see today. But the experienced ones know how to do their choreographed match, but also make it feel organic. Whereas an unexperienced person is just going to go from spot to spot to spot to spot to spot, just like Hank and Tank and the other two guys,
Tyson and Tyreek.
I mean, they had their match choreographed, and they just went from move to 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 move until it was over. Whereas if you would have had Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin against Owen Hart and the British Bulldog, bad example.
Yes, that would have been better,
because they probably called all that in the ring. But nowadays, you know, they would have had a whole bunch of spots they had planned, and it would look completely different than Hank and Tank versus Tyson and Tyreek.
I would hope so.
Yes.
But also to that, and that's something that I meant to add to the list, because it was something when you mentioned it on Observer.
Well, before
Live,
are you using a totally different topic?
No.
Okay.
On the choreographing front, and I think this is where probably the PC method, and it's their way of dealing with getting greener people on television, but because you had mentioned, it's like, you think Will Ospreay's not choreographing that shit. But I think the big difference is, and it's one of the reasons why I think it looks so much better, again, outside of the experience and skill level, obviously, is it's one thing to sit in the back, you know, me and Jerry Lynn, and talk about what we're going to do. And I'm doing air quotes here for people only on audio, choreographing our match. It's another thing to have someone else put a match together for you and have you go out there and practice it.
Sure.
Because you're not the one visualizing the spots and feeling them in your head as you put them together. And also, too, I firmly believe this, when you practice a match, while you may execute the moves better or remember the spots better because you've practiced it 3 times, 20 times, whatever the practice, the music between the notes part of wrestling, I honestly believe will get worse every single time you do the match. Because it's one of the things that I really disliked in Smoky Mountain. And on occasion when it came up working with certain people, I strongly disliked it throughout my career, is the, oh, let's just do the same match we had last night. And I just find that if you're doing it exactly the same that you did the night before or 2 hours before, you lose some of the heart of it. Because you got a certain reaction from it last time, so you're expecting that reaction again. And it's like, you know, they talk about, your first time with someone being a little more special than the 6,000th time with someone. And I think there's a newness and freshness when you haven't practiced and done it. And I often throughout my career, it's like I would enjoy the very first time I worked with someone way better than the sixth time I worked with them that week. And I think if you take, you know, people with the lesser experience of the Sol Rukas and whoever else are the green people in NXT, and you give them the week in the PC to practice it, while they may execute it better, I think they lose the art part. And I always like to use figure skating as my analogy. Again, I know they score it. I think they still score it similar, but they don't show it the same. You used to get technical merit and artistic impression scores. And it's, you would see people that would have tremendous technical merit because they'd hit the quadruple this and the triple this and they hit all their moves great. But it's like, There was no art and presentation to it. And I think the more you practice, the harder it is to have those music between the notes.
Well, go ahead.
There was one match. I'm trying to think of where it was. I think it was like Seoul, Korea. And it was me and I think Jay, might have been William Regal, against Booker and Goldust. Actually, probably the time frame was William, but either way. But there was just, you know, we're just call it in there having a good tag match because we're four guys that know how to work and we're on a house show in South Korea. And I don't remember which. I think Goldust, I was in with Dust, Goldust, and it's like he tags Booker in and he grabs me by the shoulder and stands me up straight. And Booker gets in and boots me in the gut and I bend over selling it. And Dustin, just because he felt it, grabbed my shoulder and picked me up again. And Booker booted me in the stomach and I bent over selling. And then Dustin did it again. And we did it like five or six times. And the crowd really got into it. And then the next night we're in somewhere in Japan. And it's like, oh, let's do that same spot again. And it's like, crowd just didn't get into it. It didn't have the same thing to it. And it's like, it's better just to feel it out there than try to plan everything. And I think, again, it's probably the damned if you do, damned if you don't, when you're trying to put very green people on television, but it loses a lot of my interest because they're not giving moments for me to breathe.
Well, there's one more aspect we haven't talked about in all of this. And that is that, let's think about the phrase, the music between the notes. The background behind the foreground of that oil painting. If I take a song, okay, and I take out all of the music between the notes, what do I get? Just a jumble of gobbledygook and also a much shorter song, okay? I think one of the key aspects to this is the more veteran wrestlers inherently have an easier time with the music between the notes, because they understand how time passes in a ring better. Because as you know, and as I recall, and as any wrestler will tell you, when you first start wrestling, you just have to go really fast. Because every second that you stop, to you, feels like 30 seconds. It's like an eternity. If you pause for one second, yes. And so like you go and you go, go. Man, I remember when I first started wrestling, it was like Buddy would tell me to slow down all the time. And at the beginning, it was kind of like, are you out of shape, brother? Come on, let's move. But then he's like explaining to me like, fuck, slow down. You did a move, like let it breathe. But to me, it was like, if I knocked him down, if I waited a split second, Jesse Ventura is yelling to go for the fucking cover. It's like, I got to cover this guy. Fucking fell. No, dude. Hit the big move. Guy takes the big bump. People gasp. Ah, you fall on top for the cover, whatever. None of that. There's none of that. It was like, I got to go, 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 go. After a while, when you've been wrestling for a while, you start, like, the time starts to pass like a normal person. And then it's like, okay, I hit this move. Let it breathe. You can't see that when you're first starting out. It doesn't exist. The time is just passing all weird.
Yeah, there was also the expression, again, it's like with beauty shots, and if you could do your pose in the corner and stuff. I remember veterans would always tell me, it's like, hold it as long as you can till you start feeling uncomfortable like you've held it too long, then hold it for another 30 seconds.
Yes, yes.
But also to that, on the allowing those reactions, it was a real strong memory for me in 93 when I was working with Fit Finlay in Europe. He wouldn't even refer to high spots as high spots. He just called them reactions. Like, oh, we'll need a reaction here. Oh, we'll need a reaction here. What are you going to do? And at first when he said it, I was like, what are you talking about? And then I realized it's like the high spot isn't the important thing. It's the reaction it generates. Like, that's why we do shit, is to get reactions. And I think some of that gets missed. And then the other aspect too, and it's to that. And I wonder if it is others choreographing for them, or it is a case of they're seeing spots that people do and they just copy them and insert them. But I found in many of the matches, the tag matches in particular, Javon and Wes, I enjoyed probably the most of them all.
That was the best match.
I'm a big Wes Lee fan, and because I know him and worked with him in TNA and stuff. But and Javon's great. But there's this I found in many of the tags again that there wasn't everything was either sold the same or not sold at all the same. Like there didn't seem to be any degree of difference whether you hit me with one forearm or whether you hit me with a big double team move or whether you hit me with a dive or just a boot in the belly. Everything seemed to be sold and registered as much. And I could never tell if and when something was actually a cutoff or if and when anyone actually had an advantage. And it really decreased my emotional investment. Like there was the one tag, and a lot of them had it, that it's like, I laughed, you probably won't get the story, but that you could clearly tell that Ricky Steamboat no longer works in developmental. Then I think every single whip was reversed. And Steamboat as an agent hated whip reversals. I remember Joey Mercury telling me, because he had Steamboat as a producer on the main roster, and he's like, he hates whip reversals. It's so weird. But there would just be this, something would be done to the wrestler, and I'd be like, oh man, they're in trouble. And then they go to whip, and they'd reverse, and I'm like, oh, I guess they're not in trouble. And then there would be, oh, this is definitely the cutoff. And then they just reverse the whip and do something else. And I'm like, I never get, you know, we've always used the analogy of, you know, the video game strength monitor in your head. Like, I never felt like there was a degree of anything. And again, never is obviously an exaggeration, but as a general perception of the show, generalizing, that I think it was the women's tag, the one of them, where it's like they started hot and they're just beating the hell out of people and they hit that double drop kick and the two heels go to the floor and they do the big dive to the floor. I'm thinking, yeah, these baby faces are kicking ass. And they got in the ring and they did an arm wringer and the one woman pulled her arm free and they did a face-to-face start over. And I was just like, oh, okay. I guess all of that offense didn't actually achieve anything. And then they would do something else and there would be a spot. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's definitely the cutoff. And then they'd reverse the whip and do a head scissor and a duck. And I'm just like, spots are good. The spots are executed well. But they didn't, in my opinion, maybe I'm too old, they didn't progress in an order that told a story or felt like it was achieving anything, if that makes sense. And it just made it harder for me to get into who it was. It reminded me of, I spoke at a world fantasy convention, like a actual legit big authors convention thing. I spoke on a panel with two other authors that I know, F. Paul Wilson and Douglas E. Winter, if anyone knows who they are. And I remember on the panel, because there's all these, you know, book people, you know, people that read books and go to book conventions and shit. And like, one of the first people who asked questions, like, what exactly are you doing here as a professional wrestler? And I remember I said, it's like, well, we do the same thing. It's just a different genre. We tell stories. We have an antagonist. We have a protagonist. And there's the journey. And I know Paul Wilson, who is sitting on my right, I believe, sort of looked at me and you could tell he was like, oh, wow. And then they started asking, it's like, okay, how do you establish who's the protagonist and who's the antagonist? I'm like, well, the beginning of the match, it's like, A, that, you know, they could tie up and the one guy could grab him by the hair and cheat to try to get the advantage to show that he's the antagonist. Or when they start wrestling, the one guy starts doing better and, you know, out wrestling the other guy, showing that he's the dominant, better person who is, tends to be the protagonist. And I'm like, well, you can do a clean break. And they're like, oh. And that's where, in particular, again, I could be wrong, but I don't believe it was there, with the Hank and Tank, Tyson and Tyreek match, they did the handshake at the end, and it was like, the oh, they're all baby faces. And it's like, I could have used a few of those types of spots perhaps early on, you know, where you do a back and forth and you stop and it's like you get a reaction for both guys and whether they actually shake hands or just, you know, acknowledge, hey, yeah, good job. We're good competitive babyface wrestlers. There was a degree of that storytelling missing for me. And then also, too. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, well, go ahead and finish. Then I'll go back to the very beginning of this.
I was going to go to a new point.
Well, here's the thing about NXT's crowd. This was the first show after a PLE. And we're starting everything over again. Like, new storylines. There's some continuation from the PLE or whatever. But if you honestly watch this show every single week, I mean, I never think they need to get out of the Performance Center. I mean, I watch this show and I watch Dynamite and Collision, and like I would say most of the time, them in this 300-seat building is a way better crowd. Because when there's stuff that the crowd is into that they've been following for several weeks, I mean, this crowd is awesome. Yeah, this crowd was not the best. I mean, they sat there for a lot of stuff. We're starting new things. I mean, if you watch it week after week, I think you would have a different opinion of the NXT Performance Center crowd.
Well, I think
they normally make this show much better.
But if they were in different arenas with honest crowds, they would learn to work better and progress better as talent, in my opinion. And that's the crux, too, is they're an actual national television show where it's like, and they're supposed to be developing and learning. It's like, yes, maybe for television being in the trained PC where they can pipe in the noise if they need to is better for television. But I think to steepen the learning curve of the talent, having to go out there in front of honest crowds that you have to earn, I think makes you learn better.
All right. What's your other point? Next.
Just on the show in general, I just wanted to point out that the show cut off before the big reveal at the end of the show for me. And I jumped right to watching news.
Wow.
The end of the women's segment with Stephanie Vaquer running out ended, and then I saw a contract. They started to pan back. I realized, or I think it was Eddie Thorpe, and then boom, to news. And I missed the entire reveal to the big angle. And I guess the show went long and some markets wouldn't carry it, or maybe your YouTube TV added it after the fact, but I missed the climactic angle at the end of the show.
It's actually weird because my YouTube didn't miss it because I started watching it while it was still live and I just rewound to the beginning. I think what it is, you watched on YouTube TV?
No, I watched it on the CW here.
Oh, well, honestly, that's probably why, because here's the thing. They used to have the Overrun. Now they're on the CW. Now there's the nightly news in all of the local markets. And so essentially what happens is, if you remember when SmackDown was on Fox, like SmackDown would usually end at 9:58. Because depending on your market, there's no guarantee your localized news isn't going to kick in a few seconds early. And so SmackDown always made sure that they ended like 2 minutes before the top of the hour, whereas apparently NXT has not figured that out yet. Because I saw the whole show on YouTube TV. So I think that probably what happened was they went right to the top of the hour, and probably in some markets that final segment ended up getting cut off because the news started a few seconds early.
Which is a real shame, because when they were doing the promo segment and Eddie Thorpe comes out with a, "You attacked me," and I'm like, so do something about it, you chump. Like, he's out here thinking that this guy jumped him from behind and he's just confronting him verbally. What a loser. I'm like, you're such a chump. And then when Oba kind of ignores him, they both turn their back on him. I'm like, is Eddie Thorpe as a character a complete chump loser? And when it went off the air, that was my thought. Now, when I listened to Observer Live and you explained me the angle, I'm like, well, that explains why he didn't jump him. He didn't want to fight now. He's a worker. He's scamming his way into an easy title match. Not that the title match will be easy, but he got it easily. And it's like, but without that angle, that reveal at the end that he faked being attacked and that he did it all to get out of having to fight in the Iron Survivor Challenge and still weasel his way to a title shot, it's like, okay, now he's a conniving shithead heel. Great. But without that reveal, I'm like, who is this chump? It's like, how do you not throw hands with the dude you think jumped you in the back? So not seeing the reveal really did Eddie Thorpe no favors.
All right, let's talk about some other news here. Women's Intercontinental and U.S. title.
Yeah, I had a bit of a discussion just DMing with Jim Valley because he had mentioned it on Observer Live on Saturday. He's on Saturday mornings. I never remember the time slot. But he was advocating for Bayley to be the first, I guess it's the U.S. tournament they're doing first. And I just completely disagree. To me, this is a quote-unquote secondary championship. And having a former world champion win it, to me, just feels like a demotion. Like, Brett and Sean, after they won the world title, never went back and tried to win the IC title. It's like, there needs to be a pecking order to these things. And to have your world title mean something, it's already a big enough problem in my mind that they have two, but at least if they keep their brands separate, you know, the world champion on Raw is the best woman on Raw, and the world champion on SmackDown is the best woman on SmackDown. But if just two other former winners, or even just one former world champion winner has this, it's like, it feels the same. If Bayley has it, it's not a step up for her. So in my opinion, her winning it doesn't really mean much. But if there's a woman and...
Are you talking the first champion or are you talking ever?
I'm talking ever. But the first champion, because that's what we're crowning now.
So we got like six women eligible for either of these belts?
If you don't have enough women that haven't won the world title to properly feature a secondary title, you don't need a secondary title. Because that was the whole point to the Intercontinental title, in my opinion, for the men. It's like, there's a hierarchy. There's all the minions in wrestling that are here in the bottom trying to climb the ladder. And then there's a secondary title that it's like, when you win that or vie for that, it's like, okay, you're starting to be important. And when you win that, that's a big step up. It's like, okay, this is a serious guy. He's not top-notch main event yet, but he's the Intercontinental champion. And then, you know, they talk about it being a potential stepping stone. It's like Bret Hart stepped up to the world title picture. Shawn Michaels stepped up to the world title picture. It's like they never went back down because that would be a demotion. And that's also why, when you think back, it's like it made so much more sense for Ultimate Warrior to win at Mania 6 because it was a bigger achievement. Like, what would it care if Hulk Hogan won? It's like, oh, he gets the Intercontinental title too, and then he can just give it away because it's not as important. It's like, for the world title to mean something, it has to signify that you are the best. And if you treat all of the titles the same without a hierarchy, then what do they mean? They're just random trinkets that everybody gets their turn with.
Yeah, and just because somebody... You
know, would anyone care if... Why am I blanking on his name? The dude they just cut that was like the most incredible amateur wrestler, Gable Steveson. Like, is anybody going to care if Gable Steveson goes back to the Olympics to try to win a bronze medal? It's like, he's already got gold. Who cares? It's like, oh, he's going to go to the NCAAs. It's like, oh, I hope he places second. It's like, what? He placed first before. Like, the chasing the elusive bronze medal is not something people care about. Once you've won gold and been the best in the world, why would you go after a secondary championship?
You'd just prefer to have no championship?
No, I would prefer to go after the world championship.
Well, you can't always be in world title contention. So, like, if you're not, you can't go for a different belt.
It's a step down. That's the whole point. And I think that's one of the problems.
It's a secondary belt. It doesn't mean it's a step down.
Yes, that's what secondary means, Brian.
Bro,
lesser than the primary.
Listen, okay? If you lose the title and somebody else is in the title picture and there's other people in the title picture And the title picture is obviously very busy.
Back in the title picture.
Well, yeah, but you can't always just step into the title picture. So you're just going to like, I'm on the title picture. You know what?
I'm going to win matches.
I could fight for that Intercontinental title, but nah, I'd rather fight for no belt while I'm waiting. No! I'm going to fight for whatever belt's there. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
A lot of people that win like gold medals at the Pan Ams and then... they won a bronze medal the next year. Yay, they fucking won a bronze.
But that was not their goal.
Doesn't matter. They won a bronze. They got something. It's not like they just quit. If I can't be a gold medalist, I'm just going to quit. Winners never quit, Lance. I thought we talked about this earlier.
I'm not quitting. I'm going after
Quitters
the world
never win
title
either.
Again. You're the one that's quitting and going after a secondary championship.
I'm not quitting to go after a secondary championship. Like, if you and Chris Jericho are feuding for the world title... and you're clearly in the middle of something that's going to last for a while, and I see that Vinny's got the Intercontinental title, I'll take that belt. I'll beat his ass, take his belt. I don't care. Then I'll go after your belt.
And then the belts will mean less.
They don't mean less.
The first...
I'm Brian Alvarez. I'm the Intercontinental champion. That belt means something now. Man makes the belt.
The biggest turnaround in WWE business in the last 20 years is when they got rid of two world titles and had one. And had it on Roman Reigns.
Oh, stop. That's
and if
not
you have
why.
Four women's championships that are all deemed to be the same, what do any of them mean?
Bro, that's not the issue. The issue
it
is...
It is the issue.
No, the issue is they have you two have belts make- and 11 women. So, of course, these belts are meaningless. If you had 100 women and two belts, the belts would be inherently more meaningful because there would be one belt for every 50 women. Now there's one belt for every six. So how could that possibly... It doesn't matter if... Mary Magdalene wins that title. It doesn't matter. There's two people and six and 12 people and two belts. It's ridiculous. That's the problem.
Make a hierarchy. Use the secondary championship to step up and elevate someone. Don't use it to downgrade someone. Use it to elevate someone who may at some point get into the world title picture.
Downgrade someone. Come on. That's like saying if you leave WWE, if Nick Nemeth, when Dolph Ziggler left WWE, it was a downgrade to go to TNA. Who would ever say that? You going to go tell that guy that? It's a downgrade here. Why would you go anywhere else after you were in WWE? It's a downgrade. No, he's going to go wrestle somewhere else and be champion.
Show. You're presenting and telling stories within your company.
I disagree. I'm with Jim. I'm with the king of recovery on this one. All right. What do we got here? Two-day PLEs and three-hour shows.
Oh, my God.
I'll bet you anything we agree on this one.
Too goddamn much. It's... I just feel sorry for you and Dave and those who have to cover everything. Like, I'm waiting for the day that you guys... Well, you already have. But when the
Could
Observer
watch an UFC?
On the whole
yes.
taps out on MMA... And just says, look, what's that?
I did.
I know you did. Dave hasn't yet.
No.
I don't know how that man's going to survive. At some point, he's got to burn out and die.
Actually, to be fair, Dave is, I think, pretty much quit on like the weekly rando shows. But he still does watch all the pay-per-views.
Yeah. But you can tell even just listening to Dave. And again, it's probably WWE's goal is just make it so life-encompassing to follow WWE that you don't have time to follow anything else. As their means to help keep down the competition. But, you know...
Can I say something about that? You know what's funny about that? So, yes, you could have that theory where if we provide a ridiculous amount of content, okay, people will get their fill and not have time to watch the alternative, okay? Now, that works great when you are number one.
Yes.
But if the day comes where you suddenly become number two, now you're fucked. Because as number two, people can't even keep up. It's impossible. If they've chosen another number one, even if they want to watch some of your product, if you have too much, it's like your Intercontinental title. Why bother? You can't keep up with it. So it's like a blessing and a curse. Right now, WWE presenting so much content. It's like, it's a huge benefit to them and it's a big negative for AEW, TNA, everybody else. But like, if something should happen and TNA should rise to the number one position or AEW, like, for whatever reason, I mean, WWE's fucked by providing all that content. Like, people won't even start to watch because there's just too much to keep track of.
Well, they can reduce. And I know you've been, you know, banging this drum forever when Raw was the flagship show. It's like, how do you attract new fans to a three-hour show? Because it's such a huge commitment to start with. And if SmackDown moves to three and Raw moves to three and SummerSlam moves to 2 days and Mania's 2 days and Rumble goes 2 days, it's like, that's a lot. Like, I was off when and home. And actually, I think Tina was away doing, she went to Ontario to visit family. So I was home alone the weekend that Scott D'Amore ran his Maple Leaf Pro. And I'm like, hey, I'll support my buddy. I'll tune in and I'll get the show. And there was a cheaper price if you bought both. So I bought both. And it's like, I loved the first night. I'm like, this is a really good show. And it's like, I prepared, I don't know whether I had frozen pizza, whatever the hell I did, but it's like, I planned my meal and my snacks and stuff and sat down before the show to watch it. And I was like all excited and I watched and I enjoyed it. Second night, I'm like, yeah, I'll probably start it later and watch it on delay. I've got stuff to do tonight. Cause it's like, it's Saturday, Sunday of your weekend. And it's like, I started it an hour and a half late cause I was doing shit and didn't want to get everything done. And I didn't enjoy the second show as much. And I think the second show was every bit as good, maybe even better than the first. But I'm like, I realize that it's like, it's too much content for me personally to commit two evenings of my weekend to a wrestling show. And back in the day, I used to always make a point of watching Mania. It's like, I don't do that shit anymore. It's too much. It's like, I'm an adult who tries to have a life, and I don't have that much of a life. It's like, God, I'm a fucking hermit that sits home with his dogs and reads books. It's not like I've got people to go see. But it's like, I don't want to give up both days of my weekend to do anything unless I have to go to work. And with, two nights of WrestleMania, and again, with Mania, it's even worse because it's like, well, you got Hall of Fame, you got an NXT show, you've got SmackDown on Friday, you got Raw on Monday. It's like, God damn, it's like five straight days of shit. And it's a lot. And when they, they've added in Saturday night's main events. And, that was the one I laughed a little bit. The one hype video, they're like, all the stars in prime time. I'm like, that's every night of the week. It's like, I see all the stars in prime time on Monday. I see all the stars in prime time on Tuesday. I see all the stars in prime time on Wednesday. Hey, on Thursday, I get all the stars in prime time with TNA. Oh, Friday, we get some. It's like, my God, it's like there's the nostalgia for people that are, old like you and I that.
Excuse me.
Saturday night's main event. It's like, the obsession theme and Jesse Ventura and, the nostalgia and joy of what we enjoyed as kids or, me, teenagers, is great. But it's like, it's an awful lot of content.
Dragger here says, my sweet spot for AEW was when they had 2 hours of Dynamite, 10 to 20 minutes of BTE, and four pay-per-views a year. Yeah, well.
I remember that time. And when they were, gaining ground and doing really well and feeling hot, it's like, I even joked, and I've now started mentioning with TNA, it's like the biggest plus to our company is it's like 2 hours a week you can follow us. You don't have to give up your life to be a TNA fan. And when AEW started, it's like, you didn't have to give up your life. It's like, you could watch 2 hours on a Wednesday. And it's getting, with AEW, Rampage is going away. But it's like, you got three nights of the week. With WWE, you've got, if you go double pay-per-views and Saturday main events, it's like, God, you got three or four nights a week. It's such a commitment. And, to me, it's like something that I can follow, especially because I am a completist type mentality. It's
you don't like, say.
I can keep up with TNA with just 2 hours a week. And, I think we do, if you count app specials and pay-per-views, I think there's eight of them a year. It's like, it's so much easier to keep up on. And it's like, I can enjoy that. I don't want to encompass my life.
Well, I got to say one thing about Raw. When they moved to 2 hours, I watched the show for a couple of weeks. I said the words I never thought I would say.
You said three was better.
And that was that three at that point, like the 3-hour shows were better than the 2-hour shows. Pained me to say it, but I am a fair man and an honest man. But I can now also say as a fair and honest man that with just 3 weeks left, probably of 2-hour shows, God damn it, they finally figured it out.
They got the pacing down.
They finally got the pacing down where the 2 hours of Raw is now better than when the show was 3 hours long. And I think they're going back to 3 hours when they move to Netflix, so we shall see. God. Whatever.
Although at least during NXT, boy, they let you know when it's starting, the date, and they're hyping it up. Smart.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to put over lots of graphics on NXT. I love the graphics. Whoever's in charge of the graphics, keep it up.
Yeah, thank you. I've been taking a payoff.
Greatly appreciate the graphics so I can at least learn everybody's names.
You know what I like is I feel like they troll me a lot, but they did get graphics, so I'm very thankful for that. And as much as they've been trolling me with Ava, the payoff that they gave to her absolute incompetence as a GM at the end of the show last night did in fact make all of this worth it.
So Thorpe managed a worker.
I will vote Shawn Michaels for best booker this year. I think I'll give him that. We'll see. All right. A couple of plugs. Boom Pro Wrestling.
Yes. In Vancouver, British Columbia, Boom Pro
Wrestling. What is this date? Because not looking good.
It's December 31st, God. New Year's Eve. The show is already sold out.
I think I'm at Cannon Beach.
And, you're not that far from there. But yeah, it's Brady Roberts, who has been, I think, on this show before. He was a part of World of Hurt season 2.
He's my boy.
He's a good dude. Yeah, you like him because he's the only guy you know smaller than you.
We actually did take a picture together and I was like, yep, look at me.
Yep. You finally get to be the big man.
We could do a Baywatch tag team.
You're that cruiserweight that finally got to work with Rey Mysterio. It's like, yes. But, anyway, I'm doing a guest ref spot for, Boom Pro Wrestling, December 31st in Vancouver. Nice, easy trans for me. It's like a 90-minute flight at most. I think you're in the air for like 45 minutes. So it's a nice, easy trip. I'm hoping to see Paul Lazenby and Brady. See, I like Paul and he likes me, so I don't have to worry about him pantsing me. But
how dare you.
But yeah, so I'm doing
Don't think that guy won't take a payoff, Lance. Don't think he won't.
We'll see. But yeah, so I'm doing Boom on the 31st. And then obviously this Friday, I leave tomorrow, but Friday is Final Resolution, the next TNA app special available at TNA Plus. And then on Saturday, we're taping the final 2 weeks of television of this year leading to Genesis is the January pay-per-view in Dallas, Texas.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up for today. Thanks for everybody for listening. This is a free show. If you love it, well, whatever you're listening on, you should sign up there. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or WrestlingObserver.com. 84 podcasts a month, everybody. So if you like this one and you get the one free one a week, what in God's name are you waiting for? 84 podcasts a month. Lance is on every week. Filthy Tom Lawler's on every week. Dave Meltzer and I, the Brian and Vinny and Granny and Craig and Sean show, there's like 84. And if you sign up at WrestlingObserver.com, there's 15,000 in the archives. So don't miss out. Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or WrestlingObserver.com. Sign up and enjoy the shows and join in on the chats and join the community on the message board. It's a lot of fun. You won't regret it, and you'll have a lot to listen to in your commute every day. So that's it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.